That's the world I want. A world of innocence and fairies.
Welcome to Products of Grace, a podcast by Mercy Hill Church. My name is Lawson Harlow, and with me today I have Don Terrell and Blake McCullough. So, Don, what are we doing today?
So today we are going to discuss, the title of today's episode is, Believe You Me, The Fear. We'll come back to that. It's summertime, fellas. The salon just called me. I don't know why. I don't know who that would be. But my opening is, it's summertime, fellas. Time to get those back shaved and the petties done. Don't be nasty, men.
Already did one of those.
21st
won't
century.
Won't do the other.
Why won't you do the other?
Because I don't want to do the other.
Let's go together, dude.
Okay, hold on. This man tells me earlier that you can't go to the movies with two men.
But you won't go get petties done.
I'm not going to get my nails done.
Have you ever had it done, Blake?
I would refuse to go to anything that you called a petty. Either say the whole
word.
Thank
you, Blake. You say the whole word.
It does. It makes it worse. It takes it up a notch.
You're sitting there.
Never, ever.
This man's getting a pedicure and drinking a mimosa at 9 a.m. That's what's happening. This man is literally straight out of Mean Girls.
It's amazing, dude. I'll put in my earbuds.
Please stop.
And watch like whatever's
sports
on my phone.
Yes. To compensate for the fact that you're getting a pedicure.
And the water.
It has to be you're watching NASCAR, right?
Volcanic hot.
You're watching NASCAR. I need you to be watching NASCAR.
I'm watching the Octagon.
He's watching like Man versus Food or something.
I love Man versus Food. I'm serious.
We know.
I think there should be a level of caretaking that we steward our bodies.
Yeah.
It's deep.
Yeah.
So we got fans. We got haters.
It's true.
And the haters are some of our greatest fans.
What does that mean?
I mean, it just means that people
missed us.
Yeah, they missed us. They were like, hey, where are you? Where's the podcast? Other people have said, we were off our game for the last few. I don't feel that way.
People are saying.
Yeah.
People. Probably the haters.
Yeah. The haters say things.
What do you think we were missing? Think it's the subject matter?
Yeah.
You think people just think this comes naturally? Like, there's no thought into it? I mean, at some point, here's the real question.
We might be in a slump.
When do we take this out behind the woodshed?
I've been thinking about this a lot, actually.
Take old Yeller out.
How long can it go on?
We're
going to be out of topics eventually.
I mean, at some point, we're like standing over the precipice of the abyss. I mean, like, it's over, guys.
I have an idea for adding longevity based upon like a set thing of content.
Oh, really? So here's my other thing. When I find like a little mom and pop restaurant that I love, I always know that one day it's going to end. And it makes me
because
sad.
Because the people are going to die?
Yes. Like,
I can't enjoy my lunch because I'm just thinking about
these
people
dying. You
know,
when they sell it to somebody else, you're it's not the same.
Yeah, burn it to the ground.
It's gone.
Trash.
So that's how I think about some days on this podcast. I'm like,
someone's going to take it over and make it suck.
We sold it.
We're selling the rights.
Somebody bought the name for $3 million.
Really, it's just the Twitter handle.
So how do you think we can extend it, Lawson? What's your idea?
We could go through.
You can go the way of every other Reformed podcast and go through, I'm assuming you're going to say, a confession of faith.
But I have one in particular in mind because I like it.
The 1696.
44.
The 44.
The 44.
The first one. I've really enjoyed it
1644?
Lately. Yeah.
So we were absent for a week. Lawson had a vacation.
I did.
Kind of.
Where'd you go?
I went to Orange Beach.
How long did you stay?
I stayed from Sunday to...
Well, really, let's ask this question the right way. When were your reservations booked for?
From Sunday to Thursday morning.
But you got home Wednesday.
At 11.
11 p.m. I just can't fathom being at a condo on the beach, and knowing that I'm going to have pizza. It's the last night. You're already packed. And then all of a sudden being like, it's over. Let's go.
Get in the car.
We're going to drive. We're going to drive to get home.
We had a lovely conversation on the way home. It was a joy.
You did? I don't talk in the car.
Bro, you can't catch me driving at 11 p.m.
No way.
Sarah's yelling at me because I'm
swerving. This is so true.
Going to sleep.
But see, we're
different. I
said,
if I'm not home by 7 p.m., then it's not happening.
Yeah. But in all fairness, you know what we did on Thursday?
What?
We sat by the pool.
Oh, my gosh.
That's what we did the entire time.
But I was going to slip this man some dinner money. And now I'm so glad I didn't do it.
You were going to give me money? Why didn't you give me money?
I mean, like, he left early.
If generosity...
You always judge me on intent, not in reality.
No, I always judge you on reality. I wish that I judged you on intent. I'd be a richer man probably if I judged you on intent.
I always mean well. I have the grandest of ideas.
Yeah.
There's limited time.
That's good.
And energy.
Thanks, Dad.
What do you think about going to the movies with another man?
I think that it is most natural.
What do you think about eating alone in a restaurant?
Perfectly acceptable.
Wow.
Yeah.
No way.
That makes me sad. I think about myself eating alone in a restaurant, and I get sad for myself.
Yeah. Is it raining?
Yeah, it's raining, and it's like... It's like a Chinese buffet.
Always. That's so true. Why do I think that too?
And it's late.
I do.
It's bad lighting.
Or it's
bad
like
lighting.
A 2 p.m. lunch and it's just me.
There. And your stomach's hurting.
And the tinted windows make it so much darker.
It is dark. Or I think of myself.
And I feel like trash.
I think of myself at Chick-fil-A sitting next to the playground and kids
ice
just
cream.
Dripping off all the walls.
The kids are dripping. The kids are the drops.
Yes, like they're like spiders, just crawling, jumping. They're like jumping on my table.
Yes,
there's a
bro.
Little small foot that smushes my sandwich. Like, I'm like, no, I'm just gonna eat in the car.
Yeah.
So we saw Lawson. You're driving down the road. Sometimes I do really good about watching oncoming traffic. I like watching the people, and I always notice people that I see a lot. And we never get to wave because they're not. Evidently, there's people in life that don't watch the faces in the other cars.
I don't do that.
You don't?
Those are machines. Those aren't people.
Oh, my God.
That's how I function. I'm just telling you.
So Julie all of a sudden goes, that was Lawson. And he was eating mac and cheese while he was driving.
Lawson,
100% true. 100% true.
Who does that?
Me. I do it.
Let's just see him like drinking
so
it like
I
it's a cup.
I text him. I go, eat it up, fatty. Calls me immediately. He's like, what are you doing? I was like, yeah, we just saw you. We passed you. So that's when it came out and he was going to the movies. I thought, because as we just walked through, like when you hear about eating alone, like and you're thinking like, oh, I'm going to the movies. He said, I'm going to the movies with Joel. I was like, oh, so it's some dudes going. And I was like, I don't know how I feel about that. So I took it out on social media. So I was like, I don't know. I don't go to the movies often.
Same.
If I did, I would go with couples. It seems to be the same for Lawson. When he goes with couples. Because the whole imagination that I had of this trip going to the movies, I was way off. He actually went with two other married couples. Blake, would you do this?
No.
Really? What's weird about this? I said, what was Beth doing? She's like, he goes, Jesus at home with Rowan?
I was like, naturally.
We were having this story a minute ago with Carver here. And I go, Carver, this is not real. Like, you cannot expect to get married.
No.
And your wife sends you away with two other couples to go to the movies. So what was the seating arrangement?
Did you sit between the couples?
No, shut up.
That's what I thought would happen.
So I got the end with the person you don't know. Right? The person to my left I did not know, and she was a very pregnant woman.
You were the buffer.
I was the buffer, right? So you pay a penalty. I was next to them, and then it was Joel, Eleanor, Haley, Andrew. It was a great time.
Wait, pregnant woman that you didn't
know. To my left.
To your left. You.
Joel, Eleanor, Haley, Andrew.
Oh, so the women sat together in the middle.
Mm. Interesting.
Huh. Yeah. Now that I think about it, it would have been way better if I sat in the middle of Joel and Andrew.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
That would make that yeah. Would make
that's where
sense.
I was. Thinking.
I thought you would have like lobbied
we could
for
have,
that.
We could have. We could
like
have
it was guys'
better.
Night. Well, I was trying. It was to be, guys' night with two wing women.
I was trying. Like, I was trying.
They didn't have anything to do.
I was trying to be sacrificial and sit next to the person we don't know, right? That you pretend like isn't there, but they are. Yeah.
You have to share an armrest.
Lawson's yeah. Like yawning and put his arm around Joel and Andrew. Somebody take our picture. It's a big night. That's just too scary for me, dude. I can't get over that. That's some of these situations are too socially.
They're not socially awkward.
I don't go to the movies with people anyway.
Same.
Because you're gonna watch a movie.
I love going to the movies.
Yeah, Julie's like, I just think the movie theater is the last place. I like the movie.
It's one of my
like
favorite places on the planet.
Bro. Yeah, sticky. She's like, I could go the rest of my life and not go to the movie.
All right,
theater.
I need to tell y'all a story, and it is both a blessing to me and also highly unethical.
Oh, goodness.
So when I was in chemo, sorry, that's the part that everybody's like, when I was in chemo.
What were you taking chemo
for? I did.
For?
I had cancer when I was a kid. Ewing sarcoma. Anyway, so when I was in chemo, when I was doing outpatient, it was 5 days, 5 days in. So like from 9 to 5, you're getting chemo. And then right afterward, they would give you a backpack full of fluids. And so my dad and I would put my fluids in the backpack, and we'd go to the movie theater at the Peabody. The Peabody place.
The
that was
old
amazing.
School. The old one.
Had like the...
Well, it's not around anymore.
Had an escalator.
Yeah, it's gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. And so we'd buy tickets for one movie. We'd watch that movie, and then we'd go to the next one.
This.
And so, but it was funny because every so often we'd get stopped.
Y'all bootlegged him too, right?
Huh?
He brought his camcorder.
No, we didn't
bootleg
him.
Be still.
But what was funny is nobody stops.
No one's going to say anything.
Nobody
to
stops
you.
The kid with cancer in the movie theater. It's like, no, everything's
see,
fine.
See, you could have like crawled into the popcorn machine.
Oh, 100%. No one's going to say a word. And if you have childhood cancer in Memphis, everything's free. Everything's free.
Really?
100%. You show that wristband, everything's free.
Won't he do it?
The zoo's free. The movie theater's free.
Wow.
Everything's free. All right.
Thanks for confessing.
That's why
that.
I love the movie theater. It was one of my favorite memories.
It's good memories for you.
All right.
I went to a movie in college, and these people behind me were being loud, and I couldn't take it anymore, so I shushed them. I did.
Today you get shot for that.
Yeah, and they were like, this is what they said. No, he didn't.
Said that?
Yeah, it's like I could hear him behind me. So now if we watch a movie at the house, Julie will be like, 10 minutes into it. wait, now, who is this?
No,
I'm like,
no, sir.
Dude.
Go.
Get out. Put your phone down. Get out.
Because that's the thing. It's not that you asked. It's that you've been looking at your phone for a whole of 10 minutes. 100%.
And you assume that me watching the same movie knows more than you.
Or there was a movie the other night that I wanted to watch. And I was like, it's finally okay to watch it. And so I'm like, wow, she's like really into this movie. So it might have been on for like 20 minutes. And I sit up on the couch and look down the other end of the
couch.
She's
gone.
Straight snoozing, dude.
You know what really gets me mad? I've been watching a lot of movies with Jake Wilcox lately.
Oh, Jake.
Naming him.
And got like, something to say.
I always look over and he like doesn't like the movie. He's on his phone. But I'm invested and it's my house.
Oh, that takes away.
I don't want to stop watching, but it like hurts.
It
hurts my ability to enjoy it because I'm like, why does he hate it?
Because his attention's not
what
captivated.
Happened? Yep. Like, what's wrong with the movie I chose? You know?
Why won't you enjoy this with me?
Yeah.
Oh, we were friends.
Right.
Yeah. Shameful, Jake.
Yeah.
Shameful. What movie was it?
I don't even remember.
Apparently not that good.
It's been a couple. It's been like 2 or 3 times, to be honest.
All right. Y'all ready?
Right. Ready.
All right. Welcome. Sorry.
Wrong part. It's been a week.
Yeah. My bad.
So with that, gentlemen, let's see if there remains any living daylights. You know.
Scare the living daylights out of you.
That's good.
So here's the whole quote. Believe you me, that scared the living daylights out of me. Julie said the
What's
other
the
day,
origin of this?
Julie said, I don't understand doesn't believe know. You me. I just is totally baffled her. So the title of today's episode is Believe You Me, The Fear.
The Fear.
What do you think, English teacher?
Like, it's
what
just
do you
bad
think?
Syntax.
Is it?
Believe you me? No, believe
it's
you me
archaic
is
syntax.
It is.
Yeah. It's archaic syntax.
All right, so we'll...
But it is bad now, modern.
But it draws a lot of emphasis to something.
To you as the witness.
Yeah, believe you me, the next thing out of my mouth is going to be paid special attention
because
to.
I've experienced it or I witnessed
you
it.
You could just say, verily, verily.
Truly,
I'm good with that, too.
All right, so the Living Daylights is an archaic idiom in English believed to be early 18th century slang for somebody's eyes that subsequently figuratively referred to all vital senses. The earliest recorded reference to this term comes from the 1752 novel Amelia by Henry Fielding, in which a character states his readiness to physically assault a particular person. Says, if this person says another such words to me, I will darken he or her daylights. I will darken punch their lights out.
Yeah.
That's how that's evolved.
Makes sense.
I'll punch your lights out.
Oh.
It's about the eyes. Oh. It scared my...
So how did we get to scare the daylights out of me?
What do you mean?
Make you pass out?
I guess like your eyes pop out of your head or you lost vision or like it has something to do. It's an idiom.
It's got to pass out. Maybe almost pass out from fear.
Oh, that is
scare
true.
The daylights
like,
out of
like
me.
Gave me a heart attack.
Yeah. Okay.
Like you almost gave me a heart attack.
I'm for this. I like this. Okay.
All right. So the fear of the Lord.
Charles is dying at the back. I don't
know. Yeah.
Like Bugs Bunny.
Yeah.
Wile E. Coyote over
here.
All
right. So here's my tie-in. The toaster is a dreaded jack-in-the-box. I hate that little thing, bro. Have you ever stood over the toaster waiting for two pieces of toast, and it scared the daylights out of you because it's so violent? It's like, you know, it's like, has that ever scared you?
No.
It is for me. Like, I'm so vested into this toast.
I just forget about it and
you do,
black.
And you've never sat around for the toaster to come up?
Probably have.
What about you, Lawson?
I think I've used a toaster twice in my life.
I was telling Lawson. But
you can't make macaroni in
both
a toaster.
Times for so.
Just making toasted macaroni over here.
So he just sets the bowl on top so it'll warm up a little bit.
Did y'all grow up? There is an age difference here. Lawson,
really?
How old are you?
I'm 31.
Blake?
27.
I'm 42. I'll be 43 this summer. Can we do that? Let's say it again like the kids do. Say when's your next birthday?
I'll be 32 next month.
I'm almost 28.
Almost 28. No fear t-shirts. Is this a thing going
around? Oh, yeah.
They were the stupidest thing.
No fear.
Sorry, kids. Earmuffs. Like, it's bad. It's a bad.
Yeah, it's dumb.
They're a Christian, right? Like,
huh?
Air quotes Christian.
What do you mean? That those t-shirts
They're like Christian t-shirts?
That's what he saw because he grew up in such a... He saw the ones from Lifeway at the back where they take all the phrases and they make them Christian.
That's like, probably true.
Like the Reese's emblem that says King of Kings.
I had a...
No, it was all like adventure sports. It was all based on like...
Oh, yeah. Never mind. My bad. Yeah, I remember.
You do remember?
I remember, yeah.
I just think it gave a bad context. It was a fad. Like WWJD.
Live Strong bracelets.
That was big fad.
Those two?
Oh, yeah.
Do you think WWJD was helpful?
I think it's a, I don't know. It's a reasonable question to ask, but most people answer it poorly.
All right, so here's what we've lost. That we are a God-fearing people.
Oh, hard agree. Oh, this is better than I thought it was going to be. Yes.
Okay. So my mom, when she listens to this podcast, I always get a text. She's like, Lawson is so smart. I love to hear him talk. And so I was like, all right, so today.
Should say we have a place you can do that.
I know, right?
Once a week.
Every Sunday. Well,
for like an hour now.
So I think I've struggled, right? Coming like growing up in the world and having like this no fear and like fear is a bad thing and should vanquish all fear. And like there's certain things like, right, that it's like fear. I think fear is built into God's creative order in which we should have healthy fear and fear actually protects us. Like I have a healthy respect, fear of heights.
Because if you fall off, you die.
Yeah. I think that's real. Like there's an element of like,
don't do
fear
that.
Fear is a protective sense.
I think about it like a buffer. It's like the bumpers in when you go bowling.
You use bumpers when you go bowling?
I don't use bumpers because I'm a man.
when he bowls.
Can you go bowling with another man?
No, he always goes with other couples. That's going to be the running joke.
Sorry.
So, the fear of the Lord. What is the fear of the Lord? We all know this
beginning
verse
of
from Proverbs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Unpack that.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there. So the beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord, which is an interesting thing, primarily because if you get this wrong, you're going to get everything else wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, there is no wisdom if you can stand in the face of God and not possess an appropriate fear and trembling before the holy. Primarily because you're going to live your life in blatant disobedience of the God to whom you owe fear and reverence. And there is a sobering reality when you stand in the light of God and His presence that is preventative and it's spurring. Mm-hmm. So it's preventative in nature, meaning that the fear of God, I think, will often prevent you from transgressing Him. Like, there are a few things. I mean, I think every child recognizes this. There are things that you didn't do as a kid because you knew your dad was going to come after you if mm-hmm. you did. Like, mine was normally my mother. My mom scared me to death. Yeah. Mm. And then there are things that, in light of that holiness, in light of His beauty, He pushes you toward, right? Which is first and foremost to Himself, and then secondly, to obedience.
So what's the difference between wisdom and knowledge?
Oh, I would say
the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. I think it's Proverbs. Is it 9:10? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. Well, how would you parse the difference between wisdom?
So I think this is a parallel structure.
Okay.
That this means the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the beginning, honestly, to me, and based off what Lawson was saying, the beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. The beginning of the fear of the Lord is knowing who God is,
yeah. mm-hmm.
truly. So if you truly know who God is, then you will fear Him. And if you fear Him, you'll be wise, right? You'll have understanding. Mm. That's how I've always kind of seen it as a, excuse me, as a parallelism. Mm. Parallel structure.
So Proverbs 10:27 says, "The fear of the Lord prolongs life, but the years of the wicked will be shortened."
Mm.
Hmm.
So do you think that the fear of the Lord, I mean, I think that does, in a proverbial sense, does mean that the fear of the Lord is a protection.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would throw that into a similar category as honor your father and mother, and this will extend your life, because your parents prevent you from all types of destruction, and the fear of the Lord will also prevent you from sins that lead to death.
Mm.
Often, you're about to say something though, Blake.
I just remember pleading with my little brother in a bathroom that we shared, like, "Hey, man, you've been really disobedient lately, and according to Bible drill, you're going to die really early if you don't stop."
Preach.
I was like, "You're not going to make it past like 19.
Well, for some people, that's true, though. Like,
no, yeah,
yeah.
I think you've told the story before of like Rowan, like the reason that you discipline her when she doesn't listen to you is because it's deadly.
Yeah,
right. And I think about that a lot with my own children. Like,
yeah,
it, like, you have to obey me and listen to me and fear me in some sense, because like what I'm telling you will save your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I saw this lady walking out of the gym today with her two kids, and the little boy was probably 3, and he had a big black cowboy hat on with cowboy boots on.
Yeah, he did.
Living the dream.
A huge puddle, and she was yelling at him, "Don't jump in that puddle. Don't do it." And I started to say, and I bit my tongue, but I started to say, "He's got on cowboy boots and a cowboy hat. What do you expect? And sure enough, I heard behind me, splash. And then you know what I heard? Pow, pow. I was like, "Ah, oh, poor little cowboy." All right.
Well, what are we doing?
I'm going to read a parable.
Blake and I both are sitting here like, let's keep talking.
I love
about
this
it.
Category.
Yeah, I do too. We're not going to leave it.
Okay. I'll wait.
All right. So
I hope we come to it.
Well, say it.
No, I'll wait.
All right. But if I leave it, then I'm in trouble.
Then we'll come back.
Mershmer.
"So have no fear of them, for nothing is covered that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be known. What I tell you in the dark, say in the light, and what you hear whispered, proclaim on the housetops. And do not fear those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Rather, fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not 2 sparrows sold for a penny? And not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father. But even the hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear not, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows. So everyone who acknowledges me before men, I also will acknowledge before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, I will also deny before my Father who is in heaven," which is Matthew 10:26-33. So I think that just, it further expounds on the healthy understanding of why do we fear the Lord.
Okay, so I've got a couple things I want to mention off that text. So the going back to the beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord, I think, does, again, provoke you to things and restrain you from things. And perhaps the most noticeable of all of them is the fear of the Lord prevents you from fear of man. And if you're going to walk in one, like you just are, you're going to walk in one. You're going to either fear man, and if you fear man, your whole world is subjective. Like, it's not in actuality. We live in an objective world, but the way that you conduct yourself is going to be subjective based upon who you're around, because your whole aim is to make sure that no man is mad at you, or every man is accepting of you, or every man applauds you, right? Which is an impossibility. It's a nightmare, but men live this way. Like, I can think of times in my own life where I listened to a guy say one thing to somebody, and then probably 3 hours later say the polar opposite, a contradictory statement to another. And the whole reason, I even asked him about this, the whole reason was that it was not going to be acceptable in that second circumstance. And so he just bent. And it was really a matter of sin. And so the understanding and possessing a fear of God prevents you from any fear of man. The reason that we can go on confessing and saying true things in the midst of total opposition, and this is something we really need to grasp, especially in our day, because men love the darkness and God hates it. Mm-hmm. And so we don't get to pretend like we can please man and please God. It must be our aim to please God first and foremost. And if we fear him, then we're not going to be afraid of offending little specks of dust, men, by the things that we say, especially if we're going around carrying the truths of Scripture. Mm-hmm. One of the greatest, I think, problems from the last, and we talked about this not too long ago about the kind of the Christian morality of the past, 50, 60 years. One of the detriments of that, of the acceptance of a Christian morality or a Christian ethic inside of our world, is that nobody wanted to kill preachers, right? Mm-hmm. So you could say whatever you want to and you are fine. Mm-hmm. And now it's costly. And because now it's costly for you to say, things like abortion is murder, homosexuality is sin, men can't be women, women can't be men, the list goes on. Or shamefully, even in many churches, it's shameful or difficult to say that Jesus is the only way to heaven, right? And so in the midst of all of that world, everything was acceptable. Every ethic was a Christian ethic to some degree. Certainly there were outliers, but now predominantly, the spirit of the age is contra gospel, contra morality, at least by God's standards. And so if we have a fear of man over a fear of God, we're quickly silenced.
What were you going to say earlier, Blake?
It doesn't really fit in this passage, but I was thinking about how in Romans 8, it says that we haven't been given the spirit of slavery to fall back into fear. And like a lot of times, I think people will misconstrue that to say that like we should not fear God. But there is a sense of like awe that comes from knowing. Like I think it's obviously not an accident here that Jesus links this fear conversation with when he says, "Are not two sparrows sold for a penny, and not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father?" And then he knows the hairs on your head, and it's like, he's texting with his sound on over here.
Who does that?
Golly. Now I'm distracted. Anyway, so it's like this connection of don't fear what man can do to you, but look at the sovereignty and the knowledge and the power of God that he holds sparrows in the air.
Yeah.
And he knows the hairs that are on your head. Like, be in awe and wonder because of who he is. And that will lead you to not fear man, but to fear him healthily, which leads to wisdom.
Yeah.
So Psalm 90, can we read that?
All of it?
I win.
I don't think it's very long.
It's 17 verses.
No, it's not long at all. Go ahead, Lawson. Okay. Since you won.
Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations. Before the mountains were brought forth or ever, you had formed the earth and the world from everlasting to everlasting. You are God. This is a really good song, by the way. You return man to dust and say, "Return, O children of man, for 1,000 years in your sight are but as yesterday when it is past, or as a watch in the night. You sweep them away as with a flood. They are like a dream, like grass that is renewed in the morning. In the morning it flourishes and is renewed. In the evening it fades and withers. For we are brought to an end by your anger. By your wrath we are dismayed. You have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your presence. For all our days pass away under your wrath. We bring our years to an end like a sigh. The years of our life are 70, or even by reason of strength, 80. Yet their span is by toil and trouble. They are soon gone, and we fly away. We consider the power of your anger and your wrath according to the fear of you. So teach us to number our days, that we may get a heart of wisdom. Return, O Lord, how long? Have pity on your servants. Satisfy us in the morning with your steadfast love, that we may rejoice and be glad all our days. Make us glad for as many days as you have afflicted us, and for as many years as we have seen evil. Let your work be shown to your servants, and your glorious power to their children. Let the favor of the Lord our God be upon us, and establish the work of our hands upon us. Yes, establish the work of our hands. Psalm 90.
Psalm 90. So it makes me think that right here, I mean, it says, like, for we are brought to an end by your anger, by your wrath we are dismayed. You have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your presence. And then he goes on to speak about the wrath, right? And I think, like, basically where my mind was in the fear of the Lord, like, don't you think it has to originate in the understanding of who we are in light of who God is, right? And that our originating disposition is we are slaves to sin, right? Mm-hmm. Because it says you weren't given a spirit to fall back into fear, right? Yeah. But it does mean that, like, I think it's a paradox. Is where I'm at with it.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Because inside a paradox, it's like we should be able to look at God as Moses laid out and says, he knows everything.
Yeah.
He knows we're sinners. We are like grass.
Yeah.
We fade away. Like, our iniquities are all before him. But in the same sense, then, who does he say to take pity and to have mercy and to extend their days? You know, it's like in a prior podcast, you said the most scariest thing in Revelation is the wrath of the Lamb.
Yeah, big facts.
So what motivates fleeing?
The fear of the Lord.
The fear of the Lord. Mm. But in a paradox sense, who else do you flee to?
You flee to the Lord.
Yeah, that's what...
Because the only means of rescue is the Lord.
Is God himself.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's what... I don't know. I think maybe that's what... So when we say, like... T-shirts say no fear, or we as Christians say, like, we're not a God-fearing people anymore. It's like, if we've lost anything, I think in some sense we've lost the fact of what it means to fear the Lord. Like, and I think we've lost in a sense that maybe we have a weak understanding. I don't know, like, that's where I'm at, like, to continue to hold him in light of who I am and who he is, and knowing that the wrath to come is not due me, but it was due me.
But I think a lot of people fall in the other ditch of what you're talking about. Like, I think we're kind of hitting on the ditch of not having a fear of the Lord that's healthy. But I think a lot of people, at least in our camp, fall in the other ditch, which is not, like Lawson was talking about Sunday, like not being willing to realize that I'm a saint by the covering of Christ. And so to have an unhealthy fear of the Lord that is like, I'm a dirty, rotten sinner, and he is holy, and he could smite me right now. You know, that kind of not believing what has been done on our behalf. I think there's a lot of people who fall into that ditch of not being able to approach God as Father out of an unhealthy fear of who he is.
And this is where I think the distinctions in fear, like, there is having a fear of the Lord. Like, Paul says that, and this is on the other side of conversion, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, like, having a healthy fear of God is not, this is where I'm kind of trying to think through this well, because it's not misunderstanding who we are. Right, having a healthy fear of the Lord does recognize who we are, and let's think about the Christian in particular. This is post-conversion, right? The work of Christ has been applied to us; it's been accomplished. All that's done. We're high favorites of heaven, beloved saints. The fear of God still remains, but the fear of God doesn't remain the way that it once did.
Right.
So, like, the fear of God is no longer like he's going to crush me. Like, I'm not the people that, you know, I hear, you know, reading like Matthew 24 when it's talking about the abomination of desolation, and you see, like, they're going to flee from the wrath. They're going to say, mountains fall upon me. Like, this has happened, but that's the way I think about it. Like, I'm not saying that anymore. when I see him come, is there trembling? Oh, 100%. But that's not for me. Mm. Like, I'm trembling at his person. Mm. He is holy. He is radiant. He is high and lifted up. I really don't know how anybody can stand in the presence of the Almighty without a healthy and appropriate fear. But that fear is not a fear of wrath.
Yeah. I kind of think of it as like my fear of a tornado from a basement, if that makes sense.
It's going to pass over you.
Respecting how powerful it is, yeah. Knowing that I'm safe.
That's fair.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
All right, so let's read this verse. Or let me read it to you. Hebrews 9:28. So Christ, having been offered once to bear the sins of many, will appear a second time, not to deal with sin, but to save those who are eagerly waiting for him.
Yeah.
To save.
To save.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think,
which is the same day that he comes to judge.
Yes.
Yes. Simultaneous.
To judge the living and the dead.
Yep.
And so I still think like there is that day in which being saved has an eternal reality.
Yeah.
In which, you know what I'm saying? I don't believe I'll ever, I mean, will we ever not see God from the standpoint
of a creature?
Of a creature.
No, you will always see him in the standpoint as a creature.
Mm.
Because you will always be a creature.
Yeah.
Even in a glorified state, you will still be a creature.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So I think like, do you think that if we look at that rightly, that there's, obviously we know there is no day of judgment, but there is a day of salvation on the day of judgment.
Mm.
And I am not to fear that in a trembling fear.
You're supposed to long for it.
But yet at the same time, I know absent the blood, I would tremble because
absolutely.
in the end of Hebrews it says, "Our God is a consuming fire."
He
parlays these mountains, right?
Yeah.
You keep reading in Hebrews, he says, "For you have not come to what was blazing
Sinai.
And on fire,"
yeah, mm-hmm.
And it says Moses even trembled with fear.
Yeah,
he says, "I tremble with fear."
Yeah.
As God trumpeted from the mountain.
Yeah,
and then all of a sudden it shifts that. It shifts that scene. It says, you've not come to this mountain.
You've come to it.
But you've come to Mount Zion.
Yeah.
And it says, if he who warned from earth and he who warns from heaven,
yeah.
Right? It parlays this and says, if they didn't escape, how much more
will you not yeah.
from him who warns from heaven?
Yeah.
And then it goes and says, our God is a consuming fire.
Yeah.
And we are not those who shrink back.
Right.
Right. And so I think like there's still this evidence of being a God-fearing people, because I know the wrath that was due me has been completely and totally satisfied in Christ.
Yeah.
But yet I still see him warning from heaven, right?
Yeah.
In the presence.
Yeah.
And to be absent from that, like, is to say, oh, well, he won't come. He'll never return.
Yeah.
You know, it's to live in the absence of the fear and knowledge of God. And so therefore you're deaf, dumb, and blind.
Yeah.
Right. Which is an important distinction. Like, it's not the fear of God that is our base motivation, like this kind of fear of judgment that is our base motivation for doing anything as a Christian. Because like what you were saying, like we are covered. And so there is a fear of God, knowing that what he said would happen is going to happen. And we live our lives accordingly, but we really live that life and with our motivation not being a fear of judgment, but a knowledge of he is who he says he is, and he has done what he says he's done, and he's changed us, and he is changing us, and he will save us on the last day, that 1 Corinthians 15, mm-hmm. kind of, unless we believe in vain. And mm-hmm. so there is that, like, realizing that it's all a gift from him.
Mm. Yeah, and if I could maybe add to that, there's also, like in Romans 11, there's the statement of knowing then the severity of God. Mm-hmm. Right, like that statement is a statement that is meant to incite a fear of the severity of God.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a call in the midst of that, knowing the severity of God, do not be arrogant toward the other branches. Mm-hmm. And so it's like there is a motivation. And, we want to be careful, because I completely agree with Blake that the primary source of our obedience is love. Right? Mm-hmm. We stand in awe of him.
Right.
We see him as he is. We obey him. Jesus says, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. That's the anchor point of all real obedience. However, I do think that there is an appropriate place for understanding the fear of God and the fear of God prompting us to obedience.
Mm.
Because, I mean, I can tell you in my life, there have been things where, you know, there were temptations or there was something like that. I can think especially in my younger years where the fear of God was an incredible preventative. Yeah. Like, I'm not about to trespass him. And even then, you see, I mean, I think Joseph, for instance, when he's fleeing from Potiphar's wife, or when he's in prison, I think there is a fear of God about him, where he's like, I'm not going to trespass. I'm not going to sin against my God. And I think there is both mixed in there, a love and a fear. And I think we even see this with our earthly fathers, where, like, you know, I'm not super worried about my dad spanking me anymore. Right? That's not a major concern for me.
Weird.
It'd be weird. But
be a
what
dark
I,
day that happened.
What?
Be a dark day.
A dark day. Like, bro, that man done messed up.
Yeah. But you know,
he still holds the right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But it's like, I don't. But I still have an appropriate fear of him as in the position that he holds, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the verse about pleasing God to determine? What verse am I thinking of?
Romans 12, 1 and 2.
It is Romans 12. That's what I thought. I'm like,
he was flipping.
This man was chasing rabbits. This man only has one thing.
Let's read that. Let's read Romans 12, 1 through 2.
Okay, read it.
Let us.
I'm getting.
Let us then.
I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. Does it keep going? I thought it said how to please the Lord.
It does.
Where?
In verses 3 all the way to the end of the chapter.
For by the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think with sober judgment. Each according to the measure of faith that God has assigned. For as in one body we have many members, and the members do not all have the same function. So we, though many, are one body in Christ and individually members of one another.
Where are you going, bro?
I don't know, bro.
I don't think this is what he thinks.
I don't think it is either.
And anyways, there has to be motivation, right, to discern the will of God, which does please the Lord. Like, I do think there's still a motivation there that our spiritual service should be about discerning the will of God on how to live and carry out our lives as a spiritual sacrifice, right? On the other side of that redemption price that had been paid, we've been redeemed. And now how do we go about living in such a way of the light of the gospel in honoring and showing honor to whom honor's due, but also in the light of pleasing our God? Is that fair? Is that fair to think? Because, I mean, our God is in the heavens. He will do all that he pleases. But at the same time, it's like, I guess where I'm at is the fear of God, and maybe you just said this, Lawson, in a more eloquent way, but it should guard us. Like,
it does.
I do think, like, there is motivation, and sometimes there's motivation in discipline, just the sheer authority of God, knowing the one who I would bring shame and reproach to his name.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think one of you has said it before. I don't know if we recorded it or not, but like the idea that like part of the reasons that we, you know, fight for holiness in our lives, even as pastors, is to know that like there's going to be two other pastors like staring over us in the gutter if we do fall. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so Lawson calls me sometimes. I'll parlay this into, or I'll compare it to like, when you see a police officer pull out behind you, immediately, I don't care who you are.
You hit the brake.
I look at the speedometer and I'm like, oh, bro, I'm going to jail.
Yep.
Like straight up. I'm not even speeding. I'm not doing anything.
You're going 35.
I just
want
to like
40.
Pull the car over and hold my wrist out and be like, take me to jail right now.
I know.
And
officer,
the guy's like,
sorry.
He's like, he's eating macaroni and cheese. You know, like, I don't even need anything with you. So Lawson will call him. He's like, all right, I got two things. I'm like, oh, bro, what did I do?
You did this to me.
He does this all the time to me, which I think like gives a demonstration of that there is a healthy respect and fear there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That there is reverence and awe, but yet healthy respect of fear that I wouldn't need that from him, but knowing that he carries that authority. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Which I think is a
in this Christ God bride
ordained
that you would be hurting.
Yeah.
It's like, don't do it.
Yeah. I'm like, oh man. So he'd be like, so I got two things, and I'm, which one you want first? And I'm like, I done messed up now. So it's like the blue lights behind me. Wee woo, wee woo.
I'll tell my story later. We'll save it for the end clip, maybe.
Tell it now. I don't care.
No, it's not helpful now. So the fear of the Lord, it's good. It's preventative. I think he has set up authorities to exercise fear. Like to, so I was thinking about this, or to not exercise, but to bring about. So Romans 13:3, this is an interesting one I've been thinking about. So this is about governing authorities. It says, for rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of the one who is in authority? Then do what is good and you will receive his approval. And for he is God's servant for your good. And so like he's invoking a holy and appropriate fear to say, listen, if you don't want to be in fear, then conduct yourself appropriately in the world and you don't live in fear. Like, I'll be honest with you, a police officer shows up behind my vehicle and I am going to slow down because I probably am speeding.
But I'm going to put the macaroni and cheese back in the cup holder.
But I'm never worried that he's going to arrest
me. Sir, I was not texting. I was eating mac and cheese.
I'm swerving because I'm drunk. It's because I'm eating macaroni.
Sorry, we have to get these jokes out every once in a while.
But I'm never concerned he's going to take me to jail for murder.
Certainly. Right.
I'm never concerned about that. Why?
Because I've never murdered anybody.
That's good. And so, you know, it's like what I want to do in the same way. It's like God has governing authorities inside of the world. He does it, I think, through the family. He does it through the church, and he does it through the civil magistrate. And in the midst of all these, there is an overarching authority, and it's God exercising authority through his ministers. So, yeah.
What about unhealthy fear?
All right. Do I jump straight to the end? I'm trying not to jump straight to the end.
No, don't jump straight to the end. All right, we don't come back from
that. I won't do it.
Don't come back from
that. I'm very afraid of zombies. And that is an irrational... I'm working so hard not to jump to the end here because I was pumped about it. It's okay. I'll be okay.
You already know the end?
I know the answer to the question. Another thing that people can be afraid of that they shouldn't be if they're Christians is death. Okay.
So is it appointed unto man once to die and then comes the judgment?
Yeah. I'm not jumping ahead. I have unhealthy fears.
All right, so let's talk about unhealthy fears. Cast your anxieties upon the Lord because he cares for you.
Yeah.
Because I do think there are things, right? If you held my head under the water in the bathtub, I would try to get up.
That seems reasonable.
Yeah, but I think there's a lot, I think about this sometimes, like that moment of death. That I will have to renew my mind. I will.
Yeah.
And preach the gospel.
Yeah, as you lay dying.
As I go from this life to the life after life, right?
Yeah.
I think about that, dude. Like I've got enough time at 42 where I'm like another 42 years, like what we read in Psalm 90, is gonna go by like that.
True.
And I think like when you think about sleeping, you know, there's no, I'll get philosophical for a minute. There's no, like, I don't wake up from sleeping and go, oh, I slept exactly 9 hours or 8 hours or 7 hours. It's just sleep.
Yeah.
And I think, like, time being, in a sense, relative, like, I can't tell the difference between a memory 10 years ago or yesterday. And so all life will feel like a vapor in that moment.
Yeah.
Right? And I do think, like, death, looking at death in such a way, if I, you know, that the Lord would tarry, and I do any of us, right?
Yeah, certainly.
Go on to be with the Lord. Like, I think I sometimes get anxious about that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, how will I, let me use the word, air quote, how will I feel in that moment, right? Will I be scared? Will I need to preach the gospel to my, you know, like I think I answer answer openly, like, yes, of course.
Yeah.
But I do think there are things which are naturally fear-inducing, which bring about anxiety, which then I have to go back to the source of true fear and knowing that the paradox is real and that I have rest in him and then trust in him. Right. And so, like, these are the things that I believe. Like, I believe these things to be true. And so, there's no fear in death because judgment has been satisfied in Christ, you know. And so, you've told me before, Lawson, I'll bring this up, that because of his cancer,
Oh, wow. You deep tracking it. Yeah.
Like he struggled, or you said, like, I have.
I remember the day that I was diagnosed. I ran out of, and I mean, I ran with, you know, like all of you see me with, I figured out how to walk, but at the time I hadn't. Like, mm-hmm. I walked with a horrendous limp. It's still pretty bad. But I remember running out of the hospital room that I was diagnosed in. Like, I remember that man, he was like 6'7", telling me that I had cancer. Like, I remember what episode SpongeBob was on the TV. Mm-hmm. And I remember running out of the doctor's office and saying over and over again, I'm going to die. I'm going to die. Like, this is a vivid memory. A nurse tackled me because I was getting away from my parents. And that was my first acquaintance with, hey, you don't live forever here. And so that was one of the things that was, perhaps is unique to my life, is that I was acquainted with, you didn't have an accident. You were on your way to bodily death because of illness.
Yeah, you got near and close to your own humanity.
Oh, instantly. Like, I mean, and you think about that in the grand scheme of life. Like
people say they have their life flash before them, then their eye. You know, it's like they have some sort of life event. I think that's like what that does. It draws near your humanity.
Right. Mm. And so in the midst of that, like there was great fear. And I didn't even know what to be afraid of at 10. Mm. Right. Mm. It's like, what's death? Like, I mean, and I grew up in various other churches, but at this point, like, the gospel wasn't, like, I wasn't a Christian. I knew Christian things, but, you know, that acquaintance with fear, or that acquaintance with death and the fear of death, has been a unique thing that I've watched fade in my life. Like, I don't misunderstand, like, is there still a fear of death in me to some degree? But I mean, But I was introduced to that fear really early. And the Lord graciously, as I've understood the gospel more and more, now I don't really fear death as much as I fear the ramifications of my death on the people I love.
Say that again, because I was go ahead, say that again.
Because you're turning pages. I'm here mentally. I'm not so much afraid of death as much as I am afraid of the ramifications of my death on the people I love.
Yeah, so I was going to say the fear of loss.
Yeah, but not even loss for me, like loss for Beth and for Rowan in particular.
That your absence would cause.
Yeah.
You dwell on that? Like, that's something that believe brings an anxiety?
That's a unique fear that I did not have before I married. Like, before I married, I knew I was going to die, but it was just like, if I die, who's harmed? Right. And at that point, it was like, you know, people might miss me, but in the grand scheme of things, like, everything that I was doing at that point was easily replaceable. Right. But, you know, now I think about Rowan, I think about Beth. And then I also, oddly enough, I mean, I think about the congregation here as well. Like, I often feel, as Paul says, you know, I would gladly go and be home at the Lord, with the Lord. And then, but at the very same time, I want to be of use here.
What do you rebuke an anxiety with over that? I mean, do you think you look at that and say, if that would come to pass, because there is a day, right, of the Lord
there's
carries,
a day
that it is appointed. And it's like, I have to look at that day and then rebuke that anxiety with all things work together for good for those who love the Lord and
certainly
call according to his purpose, right?
Yeah.
So I certainly that, but the other is, that if the Lord should, so the ramifications on the people I love, if the Lord should take me, he has something better. Like, I mean, and it's hard to say this, right? That okay, well, if the Lord takes me, it's he will take and has been taking care of Beth and Rowan, period. I'm just a means, right? And he'll continue to do that. He'll continue to do, and he may do it amazingly. He could do it better than I've been doing it. He may add a better means. And so, like, even then, even with the church in general, this was a fear really early on. I'll be honest with you, Blake helped alleviate some of that fear, because I tell people often, like, if you plan a church, your intention should be that if you get hit by a bus, the church is fine. And so, like, early on, it's like, who do I got, right? And then the Lord added Blake and added you and added Drew and various others, right? And so in the midst of all that, it's like, well, God will replace it. And he'll do it better than I thought that it could be done. And the church, I would assume, would be healthier for it on the other side. And so I trust the providence of God. I believe that he is wiser than I am. And I also believe that I'm not going to add a single moment to my life. like it's written down. And while I might think in my arrogance that I could have written it a little bit better if I were to perish early in life, to quote an old Spurgeon quote, men who die young get far less of earth and far more of heaven. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with that.
So I think in some sense, like we're talking about like our humanity, right? And that our days are in fact numbered. And Moses in Psalm 90 teaches us to number our days. That we should look and live looking with an eye towards that this is the day that I have, right? Yeah. And that our days are in fact numbered. But what about like fear, like when the Bible uses the word, the devil, your adversary, prowls? Like these are words that describe an enemy.
Yeah, certainly.
Right? So how do we deal with the anxiety around, I mean, I don't think we fear the devil.
No.
Right?
Disarmed. I mean, defeated. I mean, sorry, my amillennialism will kick in real hard. No,
someone posted like a thing, it was on Twitter today. It was like when the devil comes to accuse you and it's like you say, did someone who got kicked out of heaven just say something to me? I don't remember who posted it. That's sorry good, if you're listening.
That's good.
I want to give you credit, but I don't remember who you are.
That's good. But I think these are real and present enemies, right? This is the prince of the power of the air.
Well, I remember being in college, Blake, you might sympathize with this just because we're similar college age. But I remember being in college and like spiritual warfare was the thing. He was like, oh man, the devil's probably, I'm like, bro, he's not worried about me. Like, that's really how I feel about it. He's not omnipresent. He's got other things to deal with right now.
I really just railed against people being like blaming the devil for their sin.
Oh, bro.
So I grew up with these books called Present Darkness.
Oh, yeah.
And Piercing the Darkness, I think. And I love these stories. It was by Frank E. Peretti.
Yep. Yeah.
And he painted this. It was almost like C.S. Lewis, like the Screwtape Letters. It was that sort of genre of literature where you were dealing in human terms, but you also saw the spiritual warfare, which I think just drew. I do think we are more materialistic and we don't have an eye
now
to the spiritual, more so now. But I also think there is an understanding. There can be a, I think that can provide an over anxiousness and over, you know, a life filled with fear.
Yeah.
I think Martin Luther struggled with this.
Depression,
right?
Greatly.
That like the devil was around the door trying to get him.
He may have actually been dealing with Luther though.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking through how do we, I mean, living in fear, not living in fear, what is fear? Who are we to fear? And then when you deal with these real and present enemies,
I think the fear of God is the answer to this question. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, you think about the devil prowls around like a lion. Well, we got the lion. Well, sorry, weird. Mm-hmm. Like, I know this is like a cliche illustration here, but like Lion of Judah on my side.
We got the real lion.
The real one, right? So, you know, it's like the toy lion versus the real, and this is going to be a short fight. But in the midst of seeing, I think the temptation, we go to the flesh. Let's just take the flesh, the world, the devil. Mm-hmm. Let's just use all three of our great adversaries, shall we? So in the midst of all three of those adversaries, I have a couple of things. First, I have the word of truth, right? I've got the spirit that indwells. And above all, I have the fear of God and the salvific work of Christ. So I go to like, we will prevail by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of our testimony, right? And so with those things, I think I'm well-equipped to live in the world free from anxiety and fear. And I do want to make a distinction here in anxiety, sorry. I think that there are a lot of men, and I would almost isolate this uniquely to men. There are a lot of men who deal with deep anxiety and they deal with, I know that women do too, but I think men maybe struggle with panic attacks and things like that uniquely. I mean, I have conversations, I personally have a panic attack hit me every so often. Normally it has to do with bodily health. A lot of that has to do with things that happened in my past. But nonetheless, even in the midst of those anxieties.
I think in provision, I think with the role of being provider, I think in weight.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
the weight of that. Like the looking out long term and seeing day after day after day. Yeah. And saying like, whoa, like it overwhelms.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, it's super fair. And there's and I think everybody's got different contributing factors to that, but I think you're absolutely right. And in the midst of that, it's like, I need to trust him and I need to bow myself under his mighty hand, both in my war against the flesh, against the devil, and against the world. And also, I need to bow myself under his authority in just my general everyday life. And if I do that, then I think the rest of it kind of comes. But faithfulness today under those three banners, I think, is the greatest way to battle against all of these enemies, is fearing God in the minute.
Well, all that's in the same section of 1 Peter.
You can just read it to us if you wanted to.
It says, humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so that at the proper time he may exalt you, casting all your anxieties on him because he cares for you. Mm. Be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. Resist him, which we can do because Christ has empowered us through the Spirit. Firm in the Spirit, in your faith, knowing that the same kinds of suffering are being experienced by your brotherhood throughout the world. And after you have suffered a little while, the God of all grace, who has called you to his eternal glory in Christ, will himself restore, confirm, strengthen, and establish you. To him be the dominion forever and ever. Amen.
Yeah.
It's like all of those things are working together. Like, we fear the Lord. We live in humility. We're on guard. We've casted our anxieties on him, but we're still on guard. Also, we're resisting him, knowing that what he purchased, he'll bring to completion. Mm. You know,
yeah.
He'll have dominion forever and ever. Amen.
Yeah.
So this is Jerry Bridges. Here's a quote from Jerry Bridges. You'll make the startling discovery that the fear of the Lord, far from being something to avoid, is the key to joyful, fulfilling, and genuine intimacy with God.
Big facts. Mm-hmm.
Why?
It does. Again, it's beauty. Sorry, going back to it. The fear of God is a beholding of him appropriately. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like, pardon the illustration, but like you're looking out at the Grand Canyon and your first response is not to leave, right? As you behold him rightly,
it's
and there
to
is
sing.
Or I've never stood at the Grand Canyon, so I don't know if it's to sing.
I would assume it's to sing.
I have.
But it's to draw near. I mean, like, it's to see and to behold beauty and to enjoy it for a time. And I think that the fear of God naturally bids you come, should you be a Christian. Mm. The fear of God, if you are not, I think, drives you away from him in fear and trembling. But the unique perspective shift of conversion is that very thing, where I see him as he is, and my immediate response is not to flee because I love the darkness, but it's to run to him because I have beheld the light. Mm-hmm. And in the midst of that, like, the only thing I can do is to run. Interestingly enough, sorry, I opened my Bible up to Habakkuk 2 earlier. Habakkuk 1 warns of the wrath to come. Habakkuk 2, the Lord says to Habakkuk, write the vision, make it plain on tablets, so he may run who reads it. This is the text that's used in Romans 1 as he's about to lay out what it means to live by faith, and it's that he may run. And so what's the overarching thing of Romans is there's wrath to come. The wrath to come should not make you flee from him. Mm-hmm. It should make you flee to him. Mm-hmm. And beholding the fear of God appropriately with spirit empowered eyes never drives you away. It always drives you to. Mm-hmm.
So Paul David Tripp says, only the fear of God has the power to disarm any other fear that would capture our hearts and control our lives.
Yes and amen.
It's good.
Why?
What else are you going to be scared of?
I think Polycarp, he was like, you threaten me with a fire that burns for an hour, but like, God has the power to throw you in hell, basically. Mm, yeah. You know, like,
this is an easy decision.
Yeah, there is nothing to fear.
Yeah,
anymore.
Well, and to run to him, because I think again it's a paradox, but running to him is that he has converted us from enemies to friends to family.
We haven't fallen back into
right?
the slavery.
And so it's like we then look at the impending wrath to come on the enemies of God. Me once being one of them, but now being ransomed and brought into the family of God, and now fleeing to him because he is on our side.
Yeah, and you will applaud.
Yeah, like you're running to your father, and he scoops you up as he's like enacting wrath on the others.
It's like, oh, how did I get here? Adoption.
Yeah.
New birth.
Yep.
You know, I think these are all the realities that then, you know, make it understand that I'm not fully, you know, I think when we say like, well, I used to fear him, that we're fearing him as some sort of monster. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, no, that's not it. Like,
but we're trained to think that way.
Yeah, we are.
And I think that's the great danger. Like, not only do we not have a fear of the Lord, the fear of the Lord that we have had in the past couple of years has been a terrible fear of the Lord. It's not a fear of his person. It's a fear of, like, I mean, one of the things that Beth and I have dealt with over the years is recovering from this concept that God is ever constantly waiting to strike you with a lightning bolt. Mm-hmm. And it's like,
Yeah, if you're a Christian, that's just not the case. Mm-hmm. Like, is there a disciplining hand? Certainly. But, you know, one of the things that is just, I guess, imbibed, and it may not be so much like directly taught as it's just reasoned around, because we don't believe that Jesus is the end of the law for righteousness. Instead, we think that he's just like, oh, he's done it, now go do it. Like, in the sense that, like, he's done a little bit, now you have to contribute. And if you fail to contribute, then he'll kill you, mm-hmm. right? And it's like, no, that's not what we see. We see him as a loving father. We see him care for us. We see him discipline. We see him provide and protect. We see all of that. But, you know, if our fear of the Lord is a fear of the Lord that is not, how can I say this? That it's not a fear that is also drenched with love and affection, then it's mm-hmm. probably an unhealthy fear of the Lord. And what you're mm-hmm. actually afraid of is your own destruction. Right. And that's, if I may be somewhat precise, is largely just idolatry of self.
Yeah, it's a lack of trust.
Yeah.
Can I play devil's advocate for a minute?
Sure.
Acts 5.
Oh, Ananias and Sapphira.
Yeah, so it says in verse 5, I'll back up. I'll just read it. But a man named Ananias with his wife Sapphira sold a piece of property, and with his wife's knowledge he kept back for himself some of the proceeds and brought only a part of it and laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and to keep for yourself part of the proceeds for the land? While it remained unsold, did it not remain your own? And after it was sold, was it not at your disposal? Why is it that you have contrived this deed in your heart? Have you not lied to man, but to God? When Ananias heard these words, he fell down and breathed his last, and great fear came upon all who yeah. heard of it. The young men rose and wrapped him up and carried him out and buried him.
And the same thing happens with his wife immediately following.
Yeah.
So why are we playing devil's advocate with that?
Yeah, I think sometimes, like, we even don't, like, I mean, let's, I guess we could ask.
Yeah.
I believe they're believers in the church.
Ananias and Sapphira are yes. actually Christians. Okay.
Yes.
Well, mercy to them. Let's die right there.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's, I think it's not.
I'm with you.
It's
I'm
not
like
just,
we have a bad misunderstanding of being yeah. like, well, he's gonna strike me with a lightning bolt. It's like, well, there is a sin in which leads to death.
Yeah.
For the Christian, and if in rebellion he did take my life, it would be a grace.
So you did not continue on in your current state.
Yeah.
And go headlong into
downgrade.
Certainly. Yeah. To add to this, though.
Because Paul says, turn him over to Satan.
Yeah.
Where he may
yeah.
reach the end of himself and
he
save
actually
his soul.
Was. He actually was yes. restored. But in this, too, there is a striking of fear in the early church.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is the primary point of the story of Ananias and Sapphira. What?
No. Well, I think we fall into
I
this.
I think it's just like, a juxtaposition of they had everything in common.
Well, it's also, you also have the juxtaposition. Mm-hmm. This is arrogance in the truest sense of the word, because Barnabas did this exact thing just a couple of verses prior, and they go to repeat what Barnabas did because Barnabas probably received some type of praise and God killed them mm-hmm. because they did so for their own glory.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, we draw this distinction, or culturally we do. It's like, oh, well, God was angry in the Old Testament. There's almost this coinage, like, oh, it's
but you
a
have to
different
at,
God.
Yeah.
But it's
yeah,
like
yeah.
in Hebrews, it's saying he's an all-consuming fire.
Yeah, and that's
the
still
the same
true.
God of the Old Testament is the yeah. same God of the New Testament. Yeah. And I think therein
you also
lies.
You also have David, Abraham, Jacob, Isaac, and the list goes on of just abominable sinners, right? Yet they are called saints.
Mm.
And so you see his patience there as well.
It doesn't matter if you were smitten in some Old Testament country.
Yeah.
The words are going away from me.
Where's your heart?
Or if you like live till you're 90 and you die mm. apart from Christ, like the judgment, the wrath is the same.
Yeah. Mm. And the judgment might be our understanding of wrath being somewhat flawed. The judgment of living the 90 years in a callous state may be far worse than
yeah,
dying
sure.
it. 30 in a callous state,
yeah.
Just depending on...
Because there was fires, like, rained down on your city.
Yeah.
But it said that they both lost their lives, and it struck the early church.
With great fear.
With great
twice
fear.
It refrains, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was God teaching. I think it, in some sense, it was the first act of church discipline. Somewhat...
Hey, now.
Yeah. All three steps.
But look
right
what it
there.
Did. It purified the church.
Mm.
It purified the church. Now, we're not called to smite people, but we are called to exercise discipline and exercise that authority, I think, in a sense of fear. I'm telling you, when we reach in one...
All right.
Yeah.
So, when we approach the table...
Yeah.
I do think that sometimes I'm saying for myself that I lose that aspect of Paul saying in the early church that this is why many of you have gotten sick.
Died.
And so I think that early church had a healthy perspective of first person eyeball witness on people who disobeyed the Lord,
mm-hmm.
weren't living to please him.
Yeah.
And I think these things are just as true today as they were then.
Yeah.
And we need to walk to the table.
In great humility. Yeah,
and
agree more.
Because it is a means of test yourselves.
Yeah.
Right? Don't you think?
Yes, absolutely.
Like to walk
but
to this
But testing
table?
Yourself is not, like the catch here is testing yourself is not, let me parse.
Well, it's like,
are you in the faith? Am I dependent upon Christ?
Versus, did I sin today?
Yeah.
Like, am I worthy to take it because I sinned this morning?
Am I demonstrating a lifestyle of repentance, so forth and so on? Yeah.
Yeah.
We have to do Hebrews 2.
I'm going to read an R.C. Sproul quote while you do that.
Hebrews 2. How am I going to talk about Hebrews 2 while you're reading a quote?
I'm just going to read this quote real quick.
Read the quote.
R.C. Sproul says, "Fear of God is an awe-filled reverence before the divine majesty."
Agreed. I like that one. You would have really enjoyed our book club on the holiness of God.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's a good book.
Yeah, it was enjoyable. All right, so in the midst of all of this, right, the primary and chief fear of every man, if it is not God, which it should be, is death. Hmm. And if there's any fear that might eclipse him other than the fear of man, it is rightly the fear of death. But those it should not eclipse him. But all that to say, how do we wage war against the fear of death, or better yet, how do we understand the war waged against the fear of death? So Hebrews 2:14, "Since therefore the children share in flesh and blood, he himself likewise partook of the same things, that through death he might destroy the one who has the power of death, that is the devil, and deliver all those who through fear of death were subject to lifelong slavery." And here, just to do a quick exposition, slavery is not referring to slavery of sin or slavery to the law. It is referring in particular to a slavery of the fear of death. Agreed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So in the...
It's a Shane and Shane song.
Oh, is it? The devil sin.
I'm no longer...
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Say. All right.
I don't have pancakes.
So, anyway, how is it that we experience freedom from the slavery to the fear of death? And I think if there's anything that's been clearly articulated to our society as a whole in the last 3 years, is that we are all terrified of death, and you can manipulate any human being on the planet if they are afraid of death. You just can. The issue is the church, however, if they are understanding the work of Christ appropriately, no longer possesses the fear of death. They've been delivered from slavery to the fear of death because of Christ working. And if we are to live in an appropriate fear of God, it means that we fear him, and we also fear him not only for his person, but we also fear him from and through the work of Christ that conquered all other fears that we might actually, and I think rightly, have. No longer does the Christian have a fear of death. No longer should we fear death, because death itself has been conquered. And not only has death been conquered, the one who wielded it, the one who wielded the fear of death, has been laid low. He's been conquered. He no longer has the ability to accuse the brethren and be like, "Oh, you're going to die." And we say, "Yeah, but I'll live." Mm. And so, you know, I think about this in the light of David and Goliath. In the story of David and Goliath, you look at it, and the primary thing that happens, the fountain from which all other events flow in the narrative of David and Goliath, is that Goliath is put to death by the stone hitting him and killing him by the work of David. Then after this enemy is defeated, then the Israelites go forth and do what? They go forth and slay the Philistine. Where's their fear? Like, were they not just cowering? Were they not just terrified along the battle lines? They couldn't do anything. They certainly were not about to walk forth with Goliath there. But now that the true enemy has been defeated, now that our sin has been paid for in full, now that the consequence of our sinning has been dealt with, that we can no longer have a fear of death, and so we go on conquering. And so because of Christ's substitutionary work, then we see and understand his victorious state over death. We then are free from the fear of death forevermore. Slavery is defeated. There is no way for the Christian to live in a perpetual state of fear while considering the work of Christ. Can't be done. We might struggle with it, but we can't live in it.
Yeah.
So I think of it like the children. Since therefore the children share in flesh and blood, he himself likewise partook of the same things. And then down in Hebrews 3, verse, I think it's 6, if I'm reading that right. Yeah. It says, we are his house. So the children in the house. And who's over the house? It says Christ is over the house. But what's he, you know, to use this language over the house is the son. It's the firstborn son. It's over the house. So the children are in the house. And this is all tying back to there has to be both judgment and mercy. And here's where Christ enters in and says, it's me, right? And he takes the wrath due the children, and therefore substitutionarily dies in their place to then be raised again. And it says he's not ashamed to call them brothers. Like at that point, like all of the children share in his victory because him being the eldest brother has paid the price both of judgment and distributed mercy.
Open the womb of life.
Yes.
Yep.
I just love that. I love that Jesus is the son over the house.
Yep.
And that we are the children. And I think therein lies the victory in that, you know, what is that? Romans 8 says that we are more than conquerors. Like nothing can separate us.
Yeah.
Like to know that he passed over former sins and then executed him in the eldest brother, Jesus, that he is the firstborn, like, and he took it upon himself to pay that price, both judgment and mercy, then it's satisfied. And there's life in that house. There's life in that house. If you look back into those moments in Egypt in which there would not have been a Passover lamb and the doors weren't painted, what would you say happened? Well, the eldest died, and therefore that lineage died with it. And it's like therein lies by, you know, by one man's act of obedience, right? Many were made righteous. And it's like he passes over the house. I mean, it just is what it is.
Spoilers for the Lord's Table in 2 weeks?
Yeah, certainly. Are we done? Do we have a Bible verse?
You're done.
Just read a Bible verse.
Why don't you read it again? So in conclusion,
since therefore,
Lawson has I have a Bible verse.
I'm sorry, I'm bad at the liturgy. Hebrews 2:14. Again,
I don't even know what, stop it. I don't know what just happened. Sorry.
What is happening?
I don't even know. Since therefore the children share in flesh and blood, he himself likewise partook of the same thing, that through death he might destroy the one who has the power of death, that is the devil, and deliver all those who through fear of death were subject to lifelong slavery.
So I'd like to thank my fellow elders, Lawson Harlow and Blake McCullough, for the time spent today. Fellas, let's go get some petties. My brothers and my friends, Godspeed.
11 He calls me. It's not like I'm dealing with the most debated passage in Romans.
Wait, who calls?
You call. So I'm driving home. This man says, and look, he primed Julie for it. He said, "You want to watch me troll Lawson?"
Oh, I remember this.
And so he calls me, and he says,
"This is the getting back for every time he calls me when he's not doing it intentionally."
And the tone, right? It was like, "Hey, man,
I did this.
I got two things I want to say to you. I got two things I want to say to you." And I'm mortified. I'm like, I just went against the dispensationalist. I just went against the Presbyterians, and here I am, the preterist view of Romans 11, and Don's about to berate me over the coals. And this never
mixed two metaphors.
And so berate me over the coals.
Rake me over the coals.
I don't care. Yeah. And so he's like, so I've got two things I want to say to you. And he heard
a long pause.
He NPR heard voice. My countenance fall.
Yes.
And then he says, that was really good today. And I'm holding on to the, you know, I'm waiting.
Like, the butt.
Yeah. And it's like,
I said, that's it. I was just telling Julie that I was about to troll you. And so I was just going to do the long pause.
And I'm driving home. It's like 1 o'clock, right?
So he goes, literally, my heart is in my stomach right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. I was like, because I'll be honest, I walked out of that and I was like, I think that to me, I was terrified of that sermon. And I was like, I'm going, this is not going to work.
It's like every time I preach when Lawson's not here and he calls me and he's like, how do you think it went? And I'm like, I didn't say that to you. You do that every time.
No, I called him and I said.
I'm talking about like years past. I'm not talking about this time.
This time I was like, hey man, I just listened to the sermon. It was great.
He literally calls me once a week. He's like, all right, so I got a couple things. And I'm like,
when have I ever called you
today? And you were like, so I've got something to tell you, and then I have a question.
No. When have I ever?
He gives me a verbal agenda.
When have I ever?
This is weird because he's not really big on formalities.
When have I ever called you and hit you with something negative?
No, but I know me.
You're like, what have I done?
I said something
stupid. I'm the police officer and you are guilty of murder?
I just pop my trunk and find it.
There's a body.
I don't know how this happened.
All right.